Please be seated. Once a year, Chaplain Molstad turns the pulpit over to a non-clergy. And I always think when you see that, I'm going to come and it's going to be empty. There's no one here. So I'm happy you're here today. And I want to use this opportunity to promote the upcoming Reformation lectures. And one of the topics is Lutheranism and the visual arts. And so we'll start off, if this was the year 1522 and Mankato was really Wittenberg, or like a town near Wittenberg, and let's say Chaplain Molstad was Martin Luther. And let's say he's out of town. And then you get to pick who is your most fanatical professor who's left behind here, who takes a group of you and comes into the chapel in 1522 and cuts this altarpiece down and smashes the crucifix and smashes every window in chapel, and they have permission by the city of Mankato / Wittenberg because there was an edict that they could now remove images from the churches. And that's how the early Reformation began. Luckily, within about 30 years, images were restored, especially in Luther's church in Wittenberg. Now, there were some ideas that helped or were linked to the Reformation that changed the way they did the paintings, but the paintings survived. And the difference between art and liturgical art has to be stretched or emphasized here, because art is more of a personal expression of the artist, and it can go just in any direction, whereas liturgical art should serve the needs of the worshipers and should be directed by the congregation. And so this is an example of liturgical art. And it's 20 years ago that I painted it, 20 years ago. It was installed in 1996, but I finished it in 1995. That makes it older than some of you sitting here, which I don't know if that makes you feel young or me feel old, but one of the two. So when I was originally given the commission, it's an honor and a privilege, but also a scary challenge, because the one thing needful is the model of our school, and it's a great theme. And when I thought about it, I thought I need to find two models, and I need to find Jesus. And of course, the best story behind the altarpiece that many of you heard already is that we had an art show happening in the YFAC, and a man came in who looked like Jesus. I mean, he had the long hair, the traditional look, the goatee and the beard. And so I did go up to him and ask him if he would be willing to pose for a painting of Jesus. And he said, sure. And I said, well, what do you do? And he said, I'm a carpenter. I said, how old are you? He said, oh, 33. And that's true. It's a true story, and it's, you know, strange. Sometimes truth can be like that. So Jesus in the home of Mary and Martha. When I was a kid, and even now, when we see a picture like this, and Luther would have approved of a picture like this, because art that tells a story or enhances worship was okay with Martin Luther. It didn't matter all that much, but it was okay. And so this one is Jesus in the home of Mary and Martha. And when we look at it, we can see that one is holding something, food, because she's preparing a meal for the guests. Jesus is a guest in her house. Mary decided she's not helping. And Martha, in such an embarrassing way that we've all done, goes up to Jesus and says, hey, what do you think of this? Mary isn't even helping. I have a meal to put on. She's just sitting here. And then to be gently reprimanded by Jesus, of all things, you know, I guess you could, that would be something you could reminisce about, I suppose, years later. But we represent the Marthas, because we all have stuff to do. We all have too much to do. And what we're supposed to do, Mary has chosen that, which is sit at the feet of Jesus and listen to his words. And so when I designed it, I wanted to try to do it without the traditional halo, so I wanted the Jesus to be lit by natural light. So I put a window right there that would emphasize Jesus with natural light. But then the light comes from within him too, so the light shines off of him and creates a film noir-like shadow on Martha. I wanted to emphasize she's half in the dark because she wasn't listening. She's getting the hot dish ready, the casserole. And Mary is, and you have brothers or sisters maybe that have done this to you before, where you want to try to get them in trouble, and they're like smiling at you going, ha ha, she probably did that to Martha too. Maybe she stuck out her tongue, I don't know. But it's possible, we don't know for sure. But it is a theme, and I've invited the audience into the painting by putting the mat, the floor mat that they would be sitting on in the foreground. So that floor mat is for you. And the painting is for you. And it's a reminder to all of us to think about that one thing needful. Let me open. Now what we're going to experience is the multimedia experience of medieval times. As Zach opens the altarpiece, this would have been an extremely exciting event in the church. And I do admit that I love it in the Christmas concert when it's open during the concert. That's a thrill for me. And I think it really enhances the worship because it gives you other images and other thoughts. The open altarpiece represents the life of Christ, and the most symbols are on your left. It's actually the flight into Egypt, and I picked it on purpose because I thought it would work with the theme better, life of Christ. A committee gave me kind of an open invitation to design what I thought would work. So the first persecution of Christ comes when they were going to try to kill him, so he has to leave, and so here he is leaving as a little baby. And I wanted to use kind of a symbolic connection to dawn and dusk. And so dawn is the resurrection, dusk is the rest, and then the darkness of the crucifixion, where he says it is finished. And I wanted to try to point a directional design from low to high, from the left to right, the resurrection. The students that did pose for it were students here at Bethany at the time. It was a group project because I did have help from theologians on campus. Rudy Hunzi gave me the translations that are over Jesus' head. A.D. and Mark Harstead supplied me with resources from the Holy Land, different interiors, costumes. Our costume designer, Merseth, was giving me the costumes. She gave me costumes. I actually had it all set up. As a painter from life, it was a challenge to try to create this because I only work from life, and so my work from imagination, it isn't up to par. The crucifixion is one of the great themes in the history of art, and what I wanted to try to do here is create a blood-stained landscape, the blood of Christ freeing us from the sin of one man. So if you look closely at that dark sky, it's red. It's all blood. It's blood red, like the so-called moon the other night. And it's to emphasize this sacrifice and death on the cross. And then the resurrection at dawn, the exterior, the backgrounds of both of them are meant to be Jerusalem and Nazareth. So it wasn't, they're not random. They were as close as I could get to the actual. Now, liturgical art isn't under that kind of restriction because it functions symbolically. It's not a photograph of the event. We don't have to worry about that kind of accuracy. And I was relying on some symbols from ancient times. The blood, the skull, for instance, was used in many depictions of the crucifixion as Christ's victory over death, as well as Golgotha, the place of the cross. And the challenge, of course, is to do this life-size in a way that will last. So it's painted in oil on rabbit skin glue. It was done from 1994 to 95, painted in the drawing studio at the Ilva Sacra Fine Arts Center. The purpose of the art, though, is the best thing about it is that it is to remind you of the sacrifice of Jesus. It's to remind you that you're in a worship space. It's to put your mind at ease over the other cares and troubles you have. And isn't it ironic? Sometimes we skip chapel because we're studying or we're preparing for a class. We didn't quite have enough time last night, so we're preparing for that class. And so it is a constant reminder for us. And thankfully, the iconoclast that destroyed the paintings in 1522, I think they left our synod. So, in the end, there's symbolic objects I just should go over quickly too. At the feet of Mary, there is a light for Christ, the light of the world. There's a vessel for Christ, the living waters. There is a piece of fruit symbolizing the first sin and the forbidden fruit. And then there are a hammer and nails that prophesy his death on the cross. And so those are symbolic elements that are there to give you more as you're looking at it in contemplation. So I thank you for your attention. I encourage you to look around you in your worship spaces and think of ways to enhance your worship. And end of the month, the Reformation lectures are coming up. Thank you.